At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll hear from the TD calling out the abuse thrown at politicians on social media. I'll speak to the founder looking to make booking a luxury break that bit easier. And we'll hear more about the unredacted internal documents from TikTok. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. We're also going to answer your tech questions as always. So that is the best way to get in touch, the email techtalk@newstalk.com. But we're going to start this week with politics. I'm not overly sure if it's just something that people like me are waiting for with bated breath, but I am very much on election watch here in Ireland. There has been quite a bit of speculation as to when the election will be called, but Taoiseach Simon Harris is holding the line that he will call the election when he sees fit. That could be in a matter of days or it could be months away. But one thing that is for sure is that when an election is called, social media will play a key role in the campaigning. And while the messages will be pushed out by parties and candidates, there will also be an awful lot of messages coming to the parties and candidates, as well as messages about the parties and candidates. While some of that discourse will be respectful, heated for sure, there will also be the other end of the spectrum that is abusive, intimidating and threatening. Gary Gannon of the Social Democrats has put together a campaign looking to hold up a mirror to some of the messages aimed at politicians. And he's looking to call it out. Sure, some of it is nonsense, but some of it is just unacceptable. I went down to Leinster House on Wednesday to chat with Gary and hear more about the campaign.
So the campaign we launched this week was slightly tongue-in-cheek to a very serious issue. You know, the idea of online abuse is something that's insidious. It's something that deters people from going into politics. It's something that has made a lot of people leave politics. So, I mean, we took some of the criticisms as being levelled at us and we tried to hold the mirror up and say there are occasions when we very much are what we are. You know, we placed them around some serious issues in relation to reproductive rights. We also put some tongue-in-cheeks in relation to my favourite one, which is somebody called me a tote bag merchant. Which is brilliant. But then also just highlighting the fact that, you know, there are occasions when we're not going to be ashamed of our politics. And that's what this style of kind of online, incredibly aggressive attempt to undermine, dissuade, belittle, is attempt to make people ashamed of their politics. Mm-hmm. And for us, it was just a little bit of a kickback against that. Mm-hmm. But it was also saying, look, you're calling us the wokes, all of those sort of things. And, you know, when you think about what that means, it's just basic common decency. But, like, to hold a mirror up to it, to start a conversation about it, was really important to me. Because, you know, like, I'm a 6'2" grown man. Like, you know, I can deal with it to a point. But there are people who this genuinely impacts. Mm-hmm. You know, calling me ginger doesn't actually impact me in the slightest. But when you actually take somebody else and you go about their appearance, it can be really, really, really insidious and really undermining. Mm-hmm. So I suppose I was in a position of strength and I wanted to kind of do this campaign just for the sake of having the conversation, because social media has become toxic. Every single EJ who you wouldn't sit beside in the bar has now found their tribe in a lot of ways, and they're disseminating hate and they're coming at you. And so I'm just going to put my head above the parapet a little bit and knowing that others have been as fortunate as I have. Mm-hmm.
There's two things at play here. There's one that is, you know, calling out somebody's politics. And if you're a politician and you're running on certain issues, in a sense, that's fair game. The second aspect of this is when it gets personal and they try to weaponize your stance on issues against you, or they do comment on your appearance or your accent or where you're from. Do you think it is fair game for people to take issue with the policy side of things?
Absolutely. I'm a politician and I make decisions that impact people's lives, and hopefully we'll continue to do that. When I take that decision, if it has a detrimental impact on a person's life, if a person disagrees, if they question the manner in which I'm making that decision, I think it's absolutely fair game. And you know, I've had those type of criticisms. I've taken tough decisions, both as a councillor and as a TD, that people would disagree with me on, and I've received the backlash for it, and that is absolutely fair game. Like, that is completely 1,000,000% fair game. But when it comes to situations like there is a group of people standing outside a centre where refugees are spreading absolute vitriol and hurling abuse, and because we don't want to align ourselves with that type of politics, we then become traitors and sellouts, and that's very, very different. Again, when it's something about my appearance, like, to a point, grand, we can laugh and joke about it. But when it's taking somebody who, and again, I think women are more disproportionately impacted by this. I think minorities are absolutely more disproportionately impacted than I ever will be. That's when it becomes really insidious. That's when it becomes targeted. You know, you've seen politicians' family members. You've seen people go after politicians' family members. And we've also seen the spillover now. Because people are so emboldened when being able to have such free rein online to say whatever they like without consequence, we now have a scenario where this also comes out into the streets now. Mm-hmm. The local and European elections, I think there was a lot of beyond red flags there. When we had people in our Ellen Doherty, my own branch, I mean, she was physically, and her campaigners were physically stopped from putting up posters by people who were emboldened online. I mean, that's when it becomes really, really dangerous. So going into another election, this is where I'm just, it's not even a stand. It's more just holding the mirror up and saying, like, this is ridiculous. Why aren't we talking about it?
And I suppose it does go beyond politics. It's something that we've spoken about on the show. You know, journalists get it an awful lot. Any individual that, you know, raises an issue, whether it is in a local Facebook group or, you know, goes viral online for whatever reason, they can be targeted. And although we do have some good progress in terms of policing social media with the Online Safety Commissioner and so on, it does feel like some of the platforms are the Wild West, and the options and the opportunity to report and have action taken have disintegrated in recent years. We're sitting here on the grounds of Dáil Éireann. You're someone of influence. What can be done to try and fix this, to try and put manners on it and eradicate it, not just for politicians, but for everybody else as well?
Yeah, the social media companies have to be held to account for this. You know, if you go on to certain platforms, and we all know the one that's more toxic than most nowadays, I mean, you'll have people calling politicians, people in the media. We're getting called paedophiles. We're getting told that we're criminals. We're getting told that, like, when some weird revolution comes, that we'll all be hung up against the wall. I mean, that is incredibly toxic, but we don't see any consequence. I mean, I've reported people on certain platforms for using incredibly, like, vile, false statements about me, about my character. Something that if somebody said, like, to your face in any other walk of life would be incredibly damaging. And I mean, the report come back that no, that doesn't actually breach any violation. And I mean, my God, how in the name have we got here? Where we have this kind of online agora where people can, and I'm all for people being able to, like, criticise me as a politician. That's absolutely fair game. And I think that should never be taken away. I mean, the freedom of speech, it doesn't come without freedom of consequence. And even if only, if that's so, that consequence only should arise where you incite violence, where you spread misinformation that would be detrimental to a person's character, and also create the conditions by which either you in the media, me in politics, or somebody else, even in some people, we got to the point where people working in libraries are under threat. You know, that didn't start off in our towns and villages and the pubs. That started off online. And I mean, that is a really toxic place. So look, I'm a politician, I'd be grand. But like, somebody starting out in journalism, I can't step away from just a person working in the library. You'll get misinformation about a book, and all of a sudden you'll have this horde of, like, essentially violent, but certainly threatening people descending on a library to tell you that you have to take a book out. Where in the name of God are we going with that? And if that starts off on social media, that social media company has to be held to account. Obviously we have to commission, but like, it doesn't really have much in the way of teeth. I mean, the fines of thousands for people that earn billions is not a deterrent. We need strong recourse to justice for those who find themselves on the receiving end of online, not only online hatred, but online hatred that's like as a means of kind of being threatening to just stop you from going about your day-to-day business, and that's actually just false and inaccurate. Like, these platforms can't be without consequence.
And as we face into a general election day TBC, you know, the previous few elections, social media was a tool for the politicians and the parties to spread their message. Do you anticipate that people and parties will be more cautious about the platforms that they try to spread their message on for fear of getting backlash? Or are all politicians like you going to put the armour on and just take it on the chin?
Yeah, it's our old quote that we have the wolf by the ears and we can't hold it nor let it go. I mean, social media is still incredibly influential. These Facebook groups and all of those sort of places, it's like you can't let them go. If that's where misinformation is being spread, it also needs to be a place where we also either need to take a little bit of a fight back. I think in my own area, Daniel Ennis has done an amazing work in terms of using his platform to spread love as opposed to some of the hates. But I do have to say, like, I mean, I don't go on and read comments. I mean, it's the whole, like, the post and ghost thing, which a term I've just learned. I mean, we'll put a video up and I'm not going to go up and have a look at the feedback. Whereas previously, you'd be like, oh, it's interesting what that person's saying. You'd actually learn. Mm-hmm. You know, you would learn from people's comments. But now it's a cesspit. Mm-hmm. Like, of just nothing but violent hatred. So I just wouldn't do it anymore. But that doesn't take from the fact that it still is important. And it's kind of like, social media is not going away.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be with us. It's going to be with me well into my older years. If I'm lucky enough to have grandkids, they'll have some version of social media. Mm-hmm. It's just, these platforms can't be unregulated. They can't be a Wild West. They can't be a cesspit of violent and misinformation and targeting.
Mm-hmm. My final question is, you said that this campaign is to try and hold up a mirror and to own aspects of what's being said about you and to just call out the nonsense of some of the rest of it. For individuals who are being targeted online, very often we have conversations around kids being cyberbullied, but adults can be cyberbullied too. And there's a sense of shame and embarrassment and they don't know where to go or where to reach out to for help or for guidance. Would you say that people should call out this bad behaviour and, you know, whether it is with the Gardaí or whether it is mentioning it to their local representative, whatever it might be, to try and address it in some capacity rather than just taking it as one of those things?
Well, the law of the land still applies. I think if a person goes online and accuses another person of being a sex offender or refers to something about their being that's false, I mean, the social media company needs to be held to account for that. But I mean, I'm also very conscious I'm in a position of fair privilege in the sense that, like, I'm the abuse that I've faced. And look, I kind of became more known to me when people started working in my office as well, so I had access to my social media and they'd be like, this is not normal. I feel I'm in a position where I can call it out. I don't think everybody else is in that position. And I suppose that's why I don't mind ever putting my head up above the parapet. Mm-hmm. And also, it's a way of saying to some of the people who are saying, oh, you woke trendy lefty. It's like, I'm woke because, like, I don't want to denigrate a person because of their beliefs, their sexual orientation. You know, that's just decency. Mm-hmm. That's how we were born. That's how we grew up. That's the values my community gave me. It's just you've been given a label now that's supposed to undermine it. And because things haven't gone right in your world, you're using it as a way of kind of articulating your own anger. But, like, this is no, I don't have things to be ashamed of here.
Yeah, that was Social Democrats TD Gary Gannon speaking to me outside Leinster House on Wednesday. I would love to know what you think, because the issue of online abuse is nothing new. It has been around for such a long time. And I do feel that some people now think it is fair game. If you are in the public eye, if you put yourself out there, if you share a photograph, whatever it is, it's fair game. You're opening yourself up for abuse. Personally, and this is something that I've spoken about quite a bit, I think it's completely unacceptable. Whatever about disagreeing with someone's opinion or someone's politics, as Gary said, I do think that it is over the line when things turn abusive, threatening, intimidating, harassing. And I can say that confidently because I have been on the receiving end of it. I have no issue with people telling me that I'm wrong about something or calling me out. If I misspeak, totally fine. But I went through a phase, multiple phases, I suppose, of not wanting to do my job because of the abuse that I was getting. And this isn't a pity party. It's the reality of being a journalist in 2024. But it was also the reality of being a journalist back in 2013, 2014, and so on. So I would love to see more being done in relation to the abuse of people online as a whole. But let me know what you think. Have you experienced it yourself? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Right, when we come back here on Newstalk, we're going to stick with social media, this time looking at internal documents from TikTok. Stay tuned.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Before the break, we were hearing from Gary Gannon about the abuse of politicians on social media and what more needs to be done to put manners on these platforms. And unfortunately, that leads quite nicely onto a conversation I want to have around internal documents from TikTok that show how some senior employees were aware of potential harms to young users linked to the compulsive use of the app. Some of the findings are quite shocking and upsetting. And technology journalist Emmett Ryan is with me now to talk through it all. Emmett, how are you?
Yes, I'm pretty good. I'm busy out, but fascinated by this absolutely horrifying story we're about to talk about.
Yeah, so as I mentioned there, this is a series of documents that were meant to be redacted, but they weren't properly redacted, and now they're out in the public domain. Before we talk through some of the elements of this, can you just give us context as to how they came to light?
Yeah, essentially, well, the redacting is the key thing here, in that it's reminding me, if you recall, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Hidden Figures, where someone held up redacted documents to the light so they could read them. So essentially, it wasn't quite that. So the details, they were like part of a case filed by the state of Kentucky Attorney General's office, although I say it's actually the Commonwealth of Kentucky for being precise, because I'm a nerd like that, Jess. And basically, these details were released in error because of a faulty digital redaction process. So I suppose yay technology for once for its failings.
Yeah, some of the information is pretty stark, because we get a bit of insight into the lack of content moderation. And this is content that should, by definition, and is breaching the terms of service and the rules laid out by TikTok on TikTok for TikTok.
Like, I'm going to have to use reasonably careful language here, because people are listening in and are trying to possibly enjoy coffee or lunch when they're listening to this at some point, or a meal. So we're talking about the absolutely should be having a human monitor stuff. So we're talking about the fetishizing of minors, stuff to do with sexual assault, such to do with the normalization of that sort of treatment of minors, and all that kind of absolutely awful stuff. So these are things you expect will get human moderation. And per the documents, that really wasn't happening. For when I say the most part, I mean the overwhelming, enormous most part, that this is only getting AI moderation. And as we can see, it's an AI error, essentially, that led to us learning about this in the first place. So that tells you how easy it can be. Like, there are like this content, like, which, again, there's also suicide and self-harm related stuff, really is kind of disturbing just how easily this is coming on the platform. And like it reads like this on TikTok was a case of, well, we should address this, but not at the expense of view time. So their goal was, what can we do to do this? But, you know, at the same time, we don't want to risk any amount, even like a minute, literally. There's a minute and a half of view time out of 109 minutes, roughly speaking, they felt was too much to lose. And so as a result, they felt that was too excessive in terms of policing their own content. And it's not like this is the first time TikTok have come under the cosh for how they police and protect minors on their platform, Jess. Because obviously in Ireland, they've been, repeatedly apologizing for not getting things done and saying, oh, don't worry, we'll fix that. We realize what we did was wrong. They are the classic case of, they'll get the apology in and be very polite. And then a couple of months later, you and I are talking about how they clearly not actually learned their lesson in the slightest.
I suppose one of the aspects of this is that it's not just TikTok, right? We have been talking about technology for almost a decade now. There's been issues with different platforms, and I still find it baffling that the content moderation side of the business isn't nailed down, and that the figures that were released in these documents are so stark, because it's not just the odd video that's creeping through the cracks. There were percentages laid out in some of these documents. So some of the content here now, so 35.71% of content categorized as the normalization of pedophilia, 33.3% of minor sexual solicitation. Like, they're serious issues. And I genuinely don't understand how the moderation side, how have they not nailed this yet? I don't understand it.
fundamentally, and I would say TikTok seems to be one of the more egregious offenders at present, not historically, like everybody's been pretty bad over the years, Jess. It's essentially they're trying to work out what's the cheapest possible way we can have moderation. Like, that really does seem to be what the focus is. Like, I'm going to bring you all the way back to Bebo, if you recall that, folks. Mm-hmm. And like, Bebo was, as was the one social platform which ever I felt took this seriously, because they considered it existential to their business. It should be existential to everybody else. And there was a long time where the overwhelming majority of staff in Bebo, this is when it was a company that was succeeding, just to be clear, were focused on, preventing harmful content, like far greater than, you know, business development, than accounts, than basic business functions, than growth, all the sort of things you expect in any kind of, you know, tech business. The total number of content moderating related roles vastly superseded that. And, you know, that was the level that they felt they needed to get to because they considered it so existential. And essentially no social network since has thought the same way. And that's kind of concerning.
Yeah, I just think that the fact that, you know, social media has been around, like, think back to Bebo, that was the thing when I was in school. So that's how long ago it was. And I find it very concerning. And I can completely understand why places like Kentucky are taking these cases and making these allegations. Now, I should say that there are quotes from TikTok. They are saying that some of the details here have been cherry picked and they're being presented out of context. They are also saying that they do take safety. Safety is one of the core priorities that defines TikTok. But beyond TikTok itself, I suppose it does pose the bigger question around younger people being on social media. We know that Instagram, we had them on this program, recently launched teenage accounts. So anyone under the age of 18 will now be placed in two categories to protect them online. We know that younger people under the age of 16 will have their accounts associated with their parents. Is the bottom line here that just social media of any nature is not suitable for people who are not adults?
I mean, that's the easy line. My argument would be that, like, social media right now, there's no age barrier in terms of where you'd argue there isn't a suitability level issue right now because of the stuff that's getting through. And you may go, oh, well, come on, we should be able to make decisions as adults. Yeah, we should. But also within that decision-making process, and this includes teenagers, we should be able to avoid certain content if we want to avoid it. And it's showing that the algos in TikTok right now are not making it easy to avoid that content. Like, to talk of the rabbit hole, so to speak. Like, if, you know, I'm pretty nerdy, as you know, Jess. So if I go down a rabbit hole, I might go to, say, a random battle on Wikipedia. And about an hour and a half later, I'm looking at some, you know, story about a movie from 1950 that I never heard of that is to do with a rom-com of some kind, because that's the, you know, the way rabbit holes should go. It should be wild and varying. With TikTok, it's almost a case of, well, you've seen one of these harmful content style videos, let's pile a few more into your algo, baby. Where really what most of those users are kind of going, well, I didn't actually like that, I'd like to see less of this, and they're making it harder for them to see less of this awful content.
I know that myself, like, I'm not on TikTok anymore. I deleted the app from my phone entirely. I use Instagram quite a bit, and I'm not on X really anymore either. But I do note that the echo chamber and the algorithm, you know, if you engage with content, so at the moment I'm watching a lot of, you know, house organization videos because I'm still getting used to my house. And so pretty much every video is related to that in some capacity. And it's just a reminder that, you know, that's a fraction of what's uploaded on social media every single day. And the fact that the companies aren't fully transparent as to how their algorithm works, and also how you can interrupt your algorithm to see less content or shake it up or have it completely randomized, that is at the heart of this issue. But it's also the entire point of social media.
You know, I think because they're saying, well, this user liked this, I show them more of this. But it's a case of the technology not being intelligent enough to realize when the user may have engaged with it, but never wants to engage that again, is what it hasn't learned yet, essentially. And so, you know, helping the user move away from that is proving harder and harder. Like, you know, I even see it with, like, you know, with safe stuff, just to be clear. Like, when I'm on YouTube, like, I might have gone, oh, I'll watch this one video from this thing. And I was like, no, I don't want another 30 recommended. It was literally the one thing I wanted from that, guys. I want my recommendations to be far more focused on B, C, and D. You're focusing way too much on A. And so that's even with safe stuff. So obviously with harmful content, that's just an even bigger concern.
I do wonder where this is going to end up, because there's a lot of talk at the moment about not just social media companies, but tech, big tech as a whole. Are these companies too influential? Are they too powerful? Are they too big? What's going to change, and how long will it take for things to change to not only make social media safer for younger platforms, but also to protect consumers at large?
So, yeah, Jess, essentially it comes down to, you know, the carrot and stick approach. Like, I'm not sure what the carrot is, but the stick has got to be a lot harder right now, is the short version, in that it's far, far too easy for tech companies to just, you know, waltz away with light fines, and they are doing the account saying it doesn't benefit us to spend this money. So maybe a carrot approach is going to be needed, as well as the stick getting harder, in terms of like showing if you actually show performance issues on, you know, this will allow you to do things that you basically are afraid to do right now, which obviously would be just not related to harmful content, just to be clear, but will provide some sort of benefits to you if you show real progress being made on improving harmful content. Now, I'm not even close to, you know, detailed enough in terms of my brain of what we could offer as a carrot, but yeah, you got to basically go both approaches. It's the penalties and the restrictions, and they have to be beyond fines. They have to be actually, you know, restrictions of access, I think, really, to markets for these companies have to be such that, you know, they're going to actually feel that there is a cost now that is unacceptable if they don't actually invest in content moderation. But at the same time, there's probably going to need to somehow be a motivation of a positive nature as well. I feel sick saying that, like, you know, you're being motivated just to do the thing you're supposed to be doing. But if it works, it works. And so they should probably look down that route as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Before the break, we were chatting to Gary Gannon, who is calling out some of the abuse thrown at politicians online. And I was saying that I myself have been on the receiving end of very, very upsetting, threatening, you know, harassing content. And when you report it, it doesn't get taken down. And some platforms have, you know, made it harder to report that content. And I suppose it just, it kind of makes you despair as a technology fan who loves the good side of social media when you see so many issues. Like, it's almost like Groundhog Day. We're still talking about them. Are you optimistic that manners will be put on social media companies so that they can coexist with the average citizen without impacting the mental health of not just younger people, but all users?
Normally, I'm meant to be the one who's got the sort of the dark optimism here, but really, I don't see the political will at those who are in governments. And I say governments, I mean plural, across Europe to make this a priority. Like, we see it reasonably well at the European level itself, but I think we need to see more from the national governments being a bit stricter on this in the European Union in order for it to be a real, real drive and push in order for this to become an issue. Like, the examples you mentioned there with yourself and Gary, like, I was thinking of one which didn't even affect me, but I caught it where there was, and on Facebook of all things, which is, you know, you think with all the experience they have dealing with nonsense will be better. Very clear impersonation account of a friend of mine, and like, couldn't be more obviously them using their photos, you know, using their data, using their name, obviously, and reported it, and, you know, get back to me 2 days later. We found this was not in violation. I'm like, this is a reasonably high profile person. How can it not be a risk that some people might think this is the real them? You know, and Facebook said it didn't violate any policy. So when you're dealing with that, like, it doesn't exactly, you know, with someone who's, a company who's been doing it for so long, it doesn't exactly fill me with confidence for the future. So I suppose if you want to change it, because I don't want to finish this on an absolute pessimism for you, Jess, if you want to change it, like, you listening into this, make it an issue with the politicians who are going to be on your doorsteps in the next couple of weeks saying, listen, we don't want this to be lip service. We want you to actually come up with a solution that'll actually make the internet safer. And, you know, you've got to, you know, and like, they'll go, yeah, of course, top of the agenda, and then stop them and say, no, I mean, actually think about it. Think about what it's going to take to make a TikTok or a Facebook or, you know, anyone else decide that it actually is in their benefit to actually do this more. And, you know, really hold the person on the doorstep on the street to account for that and make them think about it. Because right now they might just think that's the only way to get votes. If you hold them to account, they realize this is the way this person's going to pay attention to me after I get elected. It might actually help. So, yeah, that's my one bit of optimism. You know, bully politicians. Like, I live in an apartment block. We don't get any visiting our door, so it's very annoying. You know, it's like one of the true downsides of apartment living, Jess, is I don't get to, you know, basically nag people who come to my door. On the upside, no one comes to my door, which is a great benefit.
Yeah, but I think you're dead right. Now is the time to raise the issue on doorsteps, and hopefully some solutions will come from it. Emmett Ryan, technology journalist, as always, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thank you, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, if you want to get in touch, please do drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Next week on the Pat Kenny Show, I am going to have hands-on reviews, thoughts, feelings and all the rest about the Samsung S24 FE, the Fan Edition. But we're also going to talk a little bit about Microsoft's Copilot. I have been playing around with it quite a bit over the last little while. And I was also at a sort of AI tour out in Microsoft HQ last week. And I saw some really interesting insights as to how it can actually help with your day-to-day life, be it at home or at work. So we're going to talk through some of that. If you've been using any of the AI assistants, be it Copilot, ChatGPT, Gemini, whatever, I'd love to hear from you. How useful, if at all, have you found it? Where and when in your life, whether it's work or home, is it most beneficial? Again, the email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. On Thursday of this coming week, October 24th, Talent Summit will take place in Porkycueve in Cork. And I'm delighted to say that Dennis Kremins of Sigmar Recruitment is with me now to preview the event. Dennis, tell us a little bit more about it.
Perfect, Jess, thanks. So Talent Summit is a series of HR conferences that were created in 2011 by Sigmar Recruitment. They're held annually throughout Ireland. We have events in Dublin, Galway and Cork yearly. This year, our event in Cork is on Thursday, the 24th of October in Parkycueve from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. I suppose historically, the event started in 2011 during the economic downturn. It originally started out as National Employment Week, which was used to promote job growth in particular. When the job recovery came back into full swing, I suppose the focus of the event switched to a focus on HR and talent in particular. And that's what we'll really be focusing on now next Thursday.
I was at one of these events in Dublin a few years ago, and it was really interesting because I suppose, as we've spoken about on this programme in recent times, HR really is at the coalface of how technology is changing business.
I was at one of these events in Dublin a few years ago, and I found it really interesting because I suppose, as we talk about on this program quite a bit, technology has very much changed HR in particular, aside from every other aspect of work, but HR in particular, from the recruitment process right through to employee engagement, staff happiness, training, well-being, all the rest. It definitely has been a disruptor in the HR space, right?
Definitely has. I suppose it's been, technology has been a disruptor, but it's also been of great benefit to HR as a whole, you know. One of the topics we'll actually speak in more detail about next Thursday is the how to really use AI in our day-to-day processes within HR and talent and recruitment. AI is the buzzword, I suppose, in tech and in recruitment and HR at the moment, but we really want to dig into how we can really use it, you know, and how it can be beneficial to both small, medium-sized businesses and large multinationals. So it'll be interesting to hear some of our speakers' take on that as well. For example, we've got Holly Fawcett, who's the Director of Content Strategy from Social Talent, who will really dig into that. So yeah, it should be interesting to hear from her.
Yeah, the lineup is great. And it's brilliant to see that this is taking place in Cork because, as we know, Cork is a real tech hub. It's a brilliant cybersecurity hub, an innovation hub. And there is a fascinating atmosphere and attitude towards technology in that city alongside, or that county, alongside an incredible level of tech talent. For those who are contemplating going along, who is this event aimed at? Is it just for HR executives, or is it worth going if you are, you know, within any level of a business and looking to understand how to get more out of your teams if you're a manager and so on?
100%. I suppose this is marketed as a HR conference. It's actually the largest HR conference that's been held in Munster to date. Coming up, we're expecting over 200 attendees. But I think the topics will be really beneficial to HR professionals, business managers, business leaders, or anyone who has a real interest, I suppose, in the world of work today and what we see coming down the line in the future. We've some excellent speakers lined up from the likes of Aon, Stryker, IFAC, Carberry Group, CXC, Social Talent, as we discussed there, and from ourselves here at Sigmar Recruitment. So there should be takeaways for everyone. I think it'll be a real good opportunity to learn and take away some ideas to input into your own businesses. And also, I think very importantly, to network and connect with your peers as well. It's something I feel we kind of lost since COVID, but it's always, anytime you get an opportunity to network and meet your industry peers, I think it's an opportunity not to be missed.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was at Talent Summit in Dublin a few years ago, so many brilliant conversations were taking place in the corridor of the convention centre in between sessions. I was kind of earwigging on some of them, but, you know, people were problem solving, people were sharing problems. They were, you know, that peer-to-peer learning, which I do think makes a massive difference as well. But as you said, the event is taking place on Thursday in Porky Cueve. You can find full information and get your tickets on talentsummit.ie. Dennis, thanks a million.
No problem. Just before I go, Jess, just to let you know as well, we have Ray Goggins, who is a former Special Forces operator and star of RTE's Ultimate Hell Week, speaking at the event as well, giving us a different perspective on the world of work, I suppose. He'll be chatting about high performance within teams and how you can implement that in the workplace. And we'll also have Peter Ryan, who is an Irish Paralympian, speaking. He'll be talking to us about getting outside of our comfort zone as well and how we can do that in our world of work as well. Thanks very much, Jess.
Oh, fantastic. Great stuff. Well, look, as you can hear there, there is a fantastic caliber of speaker going to be at Talent Summit. There's definitely something for everyone. Again, the information is up on talentsummit.ie. Dennis, thanks a mil.
Thank you, Jess.
So as I said, that is taking place on October 24th. And sure, once that's gone, we're almost in November, which, like it or not, means the gift guides will begin ahead of Christmas. And to help, a new Irish business is looking to make it a bit easier to book or gift a luxury hotel stay. Adrian Stewart is the woman behind it, and she is with me now. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit more about the platform.
Hi, Jess. So we've just launched hotelandsparresorts.com, and this is a new Irish luxury travel platform. And basically what it does is it makes booking and gifting your next escape easy. So what we've done is created a platform that has a curation of invite-only hotels. They'd be at the upper end of the scale. And what we've done is we've made it really easy for people to browse and compare the experiences that these hotels and spas have to offer, which can be really difficult at the moment. If you're looking on booking.com, for example, you're only seeing the room rates. You're not seeing everything that the destination has to offer. And most importantly, we make it really easy to gift a premium getaway, because at the moment, it can be hard to buy something for the person that has everything. So this is what this platform solves.
Yeah, and I think that point around the key differentiators between one luxury hotel and another, it can be either a little bit overwhelming or it can be difficult to get to the true essence of what the hotel has to offer. So just explain what people see when they go to the website.
So when they go to a website, first of all, what they're going to see is a collection of our destinations. We've made the website actually quite simple to use. So you see destinations, you see offers, and you see gift vouchers. So on the destinations, we've really done the footwork for people in that we have handpicked and traveled to these destinations, and we've basically put on destinations that we would go to ourselves. We would never put a hotel or spa on the platform that we wouldn't be really happy to get to visit or to gift a stay at. So we've done the legwork there for them. And then when you land on the destination's profile, let's say you want to go into Clifford Lions, for example, you're going to see their photography. You're going to see the direct links through to the hotel or spa's website, social links. But most importantly, you're going to get our take on what the hotel has to offer. And then directly underneath, you're going to see the exclusive offers that we have on our platform at these locations. So a lot of the offers they're not bargain basement. This is a premium platform, but that you can get anything between 10 and 15% off what you would normally get as well. So it's really good for the consumer. I mean, I suppose what we've done is we've done the legwork so that if you're booking a stay or if you're gifting a getaway, you can trust the locations that you're going to land at.
Yeah, and I think that the trust element is really important, but also the prices as well. You mentioned there about, you know, competitively priced and so on. How does that work from a collaboration with the hotels and resorts work?
Well, do you know, Jess, I actually come from both sides of the fence. So I'm actually a spa operator myself. So I'm a director of Parascourt Springs Health Farm, which is in Enniskerry, and that's a 32-bedroomed hotel and health farm. And I also operate Rainforest Spa, which is a day spa also in Enniskerry. And I suppose where this platform came from was wanting to be able to showcase our brands, not losing a huge amount of revenue, but also not affecting our brand values. Because a lot of the platforms that might be out there for offers and the ones of past, like the old Groupons, for example, you just wouldn't go near them because they diminish your brand too much. Mm-hmm. So I suppose we've built a platform that actually serves the hospitality destinations. We charge 0%, this is the holy grail, 0% commission on direct booking requests. So when somebody goes on to hotelandsparresorts.com, they see an offer they like, they fill out a form that they would like to request this and their dates, etc. And that goes straight through to the hotel or spa. We step away from there and we give them 100% commission on that. We are not interested in interfering in their margins there whatsoever. So for them, the like advantages are absolutely huge in the sense that, you know, they're doubling their digital presence, they're maintaining their brand standards because we present it in a really nice way. And we also give the consumer the ability to see what they have to offer, because, you know, if you're not on a platform like ours, you have to go in and out of each destination's website. And a lot of them can be a little bit clunky for you to find the offers. You have to go as far as the booking engine before you get to the actual offer. So what we do is we present it in a grid-like way for people so they can decide where they want to go to next.
And from a gifting point of view, if I wanted to buy a voucher on hotelandsparresorts.com, but I didn't know the dates that suited the people that I was gifting to. Is that a barrier to purchase, or is it possible to just get a voucher?
What we've done is we've made it so easy to buy a voucher. You can do it in under a minute on our website, and you don't have to specify the dates. Really, what you're giving is the recipient the freedom to choose when and where they want to go. So if you buy a voucher, let's say for an individual hotel or a spa, they're tied to that hotel and spa. And you know what? It might not suit their needs. It might suit you, but it mightn't suit their taste. So with our platform, you go onto the platform, you press shop gift voucher. In under a minute, you can have your voucher on your way to you if you wish. It can be digital or it can be postal. You can send it to yourself or you can send it to the recipient. And one of the unique factors that we've built in is that you can schedule these gift vouchers for any future date. So if you're time poor and you sometimes get caught out last minute for anniversaries or for Christmas, you can literally sit down on the 1st of January and you can plan your year's gifting in one sitting. We've also added in the benefit of Apple Pay and Klarna. So if you are doing a few bulk purchases, you can actually spread that out over three installments as well. So we've made it as easy as possible for the purchaser of the gift voucher to buy from the comfort of their phone, their, you know, on their phone. We've mobile optimized the platform as well so that it's very, very easy to use.
This week, obviously, there was a lot of talk and there was a protest from those working in the hospitality sector. We know the times are incredibly tough for restaurant hoteliers right across the board, pubs in particular. How important is it that hotels and resorts are showcased in the right way that is not only enticing but inviting to consumers, particularly the ones at the upper end, like the luxury stays and so on?
Yeah, like, listen, coming from the hospitality side of it as well, and after the VAT rate increase was reintroduced again, it is really hard to do business in Ireland at the moment in hospitality. And we understand that. So, you know, again, we've built this platform not to try and inhibit those doing business. It's to try and encourage people to do more business. So from our point of view, you know, as a hotel owner, as a spa owner as well, you know, it's so, so difficult. And we need all the supports that we can get. We need them in a way that are high end and that can compete with foreign travel, the attraction of foreign travel. We are expensive. Like, there's no getting around it. It is expensive to stay in Ireland and I suppose holiday at home. But you know, we have such a wealth of destinations in this country that are absolutely unique. And being able to showcase what they do offer, and a lot of the times the USPs of each of these destinations are buried, they're not highlighted. So for somebody to be able to, at a glance, have a look and see, well, what is the place that's going to suit me as a couple, as a family, for example? Then it just makes doing business much easier.
Well, I'm on the website now, and it is that there's a section that will make it all very pain-free. So whether you are looking for, as you said, you know, the gift guide, if you're looking for some inspiration, if you're looking for some travel info, everything is up on the website. It is hotelandsparesorts.com. Adrian, best of luck with it, and thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks, Jess.
And that's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can take a listen back on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'm going to be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. But a quick reminder that we will be talking about Microsoft's Copilot on Tuesday's Pat Kenny Show. And I would love to hear your experiences of AI. Have you found a way to get the most out of it? Is it beneficial? How is it beneficial? Share all your thoughts and insights. Get ChatGPT or Copilot or Gemini to write me an email and tell me all about it. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Right, I'm off. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I'll chat to you next week.